Mini episode 492 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 492. This is FDH Lounge. Managing partner Rick Morris, soon to be joined by fellow FDH Lounge dignitary Kyle Ross. We're breaking down NFL Week 12 for you. Looking back at Week 11, for me personally, it was a 7-7 week on all of the games, 1-2 on the Big 3, 0-1 on my lock for the week. Unfortunately, my record for the year creeping back up in the last week or so above 500, oh so barely, 81-79-1. Nevertheless, that's still the best I've done to this point in the season. Head above water, although, of course, not with the juice. 17-16 on my Big 3, 4-7 now on my lock picks. So as I have been better this year at judging all of the games, I have been worse at deciding the Big 3 and certainly the lock picks as well. This is something that Kyle always laughs at every week. As I point out, if you went with me the first 5 weeks when I was at a supersonic clip and you've gone against me ever since, and I proclaimed it was the high water mark correctly at that time, with me the first five, against me since, 96-77-1. You are killing it this year if you've done that. For Kyle last week, 2-3, but still an excellent 28-23 for the season, head above water, and looking forward to great things here in Week 12. Speaking of which, there's my man K-Dog. Good to have him back with us here for this week for an almost full slate.
I'll tell you what, Rick Morris, you know it's been that kind of week when I almost forget to go on to the damn show. I mean, I'm having trouble figuring out this NFL. It doesn't mean I shouldn't lobby a phone call every Wednesday. Good grief, I apologize for that.
It's
just unprofessional. I wish I had an excuse, but I don't. I was sitting here and I was looking at things, and apparently the clock was not one of them.
It kind of crept up on me too, albeit not to that degree, but it was funny because as I'm sitting there listening to the open, I'm debating in my head, do I have time to fire off a question mark text to Kyle? And it turns out I just barely did. So there we go.
I'll tell you what, when I got that question mark text, I was like, what the hell is he asking me? I'm like, oh, probably, are you going to call in, dipshit? You know? Yeah, so I'm here, everybody. I'm here. What a good start to the show. What professional.
You're here. Well, you're poised for a great week. It's the return of show notes. You sent them to me this afternoon. There were some interesting things in there, as per always. It's an almost full week. We've got Carolina and Pittsburgh on the bye this week. Aside from that, everybody else is going. So to the Thursday nighter, as per usual, to open it up, it's the 7-3 Chiefs at the 0-10 Raiders, 8:25 Eastern Time on the NFL Network. Nance Sims and Wolfson on the call. Kansas City laying 7 in this one, up from 6 at the outset. This was a tough one for me. I know that you're thinking from the notes here this may potentially be a look-ahead game. Here's my theory on that. It's harder for it to be a look-ahead game when it's a Thursday night. Everything is kind of weird about that. The rhythms and everything like that are disrupted. How can you sleepwalk through a Thursday night game? Not that you couldn't, but if it's a Sunday 1 o'clock game, I think I'd have more fears about Kansas City. You can't sleepwalk through something as bizarre as a Thursday night game. And going back to earlier in the season, good team versus bad team, the results were horrific. I think it may be more of the same here. I'll lay the 7 with the Chiefs.
Well, I can get 9 at 5 dimes, and I'm going to go with the Raiders here because I do think it's a look-ahead spot. Kansas City, who, by the way, I have 3rd in my power rankings. This is a team, ladies and gentlemen, that not only has not regressed from last year's playoff appearance, but actually might be better. Now, the record may not end up being better. I don't think it will. They finished 11-5 last year with an injury-riddled finish for the regular season. But this is a team that's beaten New England, beaten Seattle, and covered at Denver. So I've got the Chiefs number 3 at my power rankings. But look, the Raiders, you have to think they're going to give a good effort until they get the elusive win. So I'm taking the points. You can get 9 at 5 dimes. I would recommend betting it there if you could. I just think Kansas City can be caught looking ahead of the Denver game next week.
I love how the NFL Network is pushing that this is a big rivalry game. And, you know, oh, Chiefs and Raiders, 1960s, they hate each other. You know, that kind of crap.
I'm surprised you didn't pull out a Raiders will be looking to avenge something like you normally. You're normal.
For the hell of it, let's just say a random AFL loss from the 1960s. They'll be looking to get over because of that. So, I don't always have these ones up my sleeve, nor will I for the next one here. The 6-4 Browns at the 4-6 Falcons. It's the curse of Steve Kasker, Steve Berline, Andrew Catalan on their 535th consecutive Browns game, if I'm not mistaken. Thank you, CBS, for that.
I know the
one
team
where
well now.
The Browns are getting 3 in this one. It's been a pretty steady 3. It's hard to know what to make of both teams. The Falcons are, of course, on pace to go 6-0 in division and 0-10 outside of division, the worst division in football, by the way, by a long shot. And the Browns at 6-4 last week, a classic Dennis Green, they are who we thought they were, kind of a situation when they couldn't get over on Houston. So hard to have the same kind of expectations for them. What I keep coming back to as I'm looking at the game is this, that the Falcons, with their explosiveness, especially at home, Julio Jones, Roddy White against the secondary, that you got Tayshaun Gibson, who's played very well at safety, but the cornerbacks, including Joe Hayden, have been very iffy through the course of the year. The Browns have not been quite the same team running the football since Alex Mack went down, and they're vulnerable to getting gashed on the ground, 142 yards per game given up. That's what the Falcons really need to go up against at this point here, because their running game hasn't been that strong or consistent. Once again, like I said last week, prove me wrong, Brownies. I hope so. I mean, I'm wearing my Browns high top slippers as I'm saying this, but I will say Falcons minus the 3.
We should also mention that this is the long-awaited return of Josh Gordon, shouldn't we?
Yes, he'll be back in there. And again, Browns going with the baby backs, Canning, Ben Tate, and now going exclusively with Crowell and Terrence West, which, again, in this town, everyone wants to make the comparisons. Oh, just like Mack and Biner. Not that we're a city that lives in the past, Kyle.
Yeah. This is a very interesting game to me. And I'm not playing the side, just in interest of full disclosure. But let me say this. So Atlanta now is tied for first place. They've kind of weathered the storm, and they're back at home where everyone thinks they're going to be better, right?
Yeah.
Is it the way the NFL season has worked? Would it shock you at all if they lost this game outright?
Oh, and nothing would shock me in this game. Nothing at all.
Yeah. You bring up how bad the NFC South teams have been, you know, out of the division. Atlanta, I don't want to get too excited because their last two wins have been in the division against Tampa Bay and Carolina, who aren't very good, obviously.
Right.
I'm going a little off the grid for a recommendation this week. Recommendation number 2, Rick Morris. Over the total here, over 47.5. Both teams have gone under 6 straight weeks. What, are they going to go under every week? Come on. Gordon's back. You talked about the Browns defense. Both teams are going to score some points here. Over as raw as Kyle Ross really grasps for his recommendations this week. Over.
Well, I can understand that. And for the Brownies, who've had a very underachieving defense, which is strange to say for a 6-4 team who is not supposed to be as good as that record, Carlos Dansby going down possibly for the year, Jabal Sheard for at least the meantime. These are crippling losses to a defense that can't afford it. So, I think there's going to be a lot of scoring. Matty Ice in the dome, you got to think that that's going to be the case. No question about it. Or if the offenses, as far as been kind of bupkis, especially for the Eagles last week and the Titans prior to that for much of the season, of course, 2-8 Tennessee at 7-3 Philadelphia, 1:00 Eastern time from the Lincoln, Philadelphia on CBS. Greg Gumbel, Trent Green, Evan Washburn on the call in this one. Eagles are laying 11 up from 10.5 at the open. A very, very difficult game to get a handle on. Again, the Eagles plummeting to earth last week. Everyone thinks now that they saw the real Mark Sanchez. It's the Mark Sanchez we saw in late era New York Jet territory anyways. But in going back and forth on this one here, the Eagles also have struggled to run the football recently, which certainly is not helping him but 144 yards per game given up on the ground by Tennessee. I think Philadelphia is going to be able to get that kind of balance back offensively, and if they can, they do have a chance to steamroll Tennessee. I think that was kind of a high water mark what they were able to do offensively to Pittsburgh the other night. I don't see them replicating that, and if Philadelphia can get the offense going, which I think they can through balance, I like them to cover the 11.
Yikes, I don't like this game. This just has all the makings, I told you to show us, of one of your penis punchers, as you like to call them, doesn't it?
Yes.
On the short week, it's hard to drum up any support for Tennessee, especially playing on the road. This is a bad, bad football team. But look, the Eagles and Mark Sanchez in particular are not as good as they looked 2 weeks ago. They are against Carolina. At the same time, things are not as bad as they looked when they ran into the buzzsaw known as Green Bay last week. So, look, the Eagles are going to win this game. They're going to bounce back at the strip, but I have no interest in, you know, taking or laying the points here. This is going to be one where you're watching the final drive and you're going to be sweating whoever has the ball. I can just tell you right now.
Very interesting.
By the way, should have kept Tennessee last week on my card. Could have gone 3-3 instead of 2-3 as they covered there against Pittsburgh Monday night, which you alluded to.
Yeah, but it's a tough year not to psych ourselves out on these things here. That's kind of happened a few times to both of us through the course of the season. Again, a lot of them on this card are very challenging, including a matchup of the teams, I believe, with the best combined records in the league facing each other this week. The 7-3 Lions at the 8-2 Patriots, 1 o'clock Eastern time, Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. On Fox, the A-team of Buck, Aikman, and Andrews on the call for Fox Sports, and this is one where it's hard to get a line on this game, but I did go to the deepest crevices of the internet and find that there is a New England -7 out there, so for the sake of argument, let's call it that. Yeah, so we'll go with that as the line.
Why is there no line? Did I miss something? Did I miss something in the last hour?
I mean, you know, Reggie Bush being a question mark can't be that big of an issue, right? Joik Bell with 115 total yards last week.
Calvin Johnson's problem? I don't know. I mean, I didn't know if, like, Tom Brady calling sick to practice today. I was confused why the line disappeared from my screen in the last hour.
I don't know. I looked earlier in the day and it wasn't there, so apparently this has at least gone through today. I don't think I'd looked at the lines before last night or this morning, so it wasn't there. Nevertheless, in looking at this, you know me, I'm a big regression to the mean, progression to the mean kind of guy. And again, yes, I am. And I'll give credit to USA Today Sports Weekly, which is where I always look, thumb through every week to get the stats, make my notes, etc. From looking through here, I see in their notes that the Patriots haven't been held below 27 since their last loss, week 4. As I read that sentence verbatim. Is that plagiarism? Probably. I'll read another segment verbatim as well here. They're obliterating them by an average of victory in excess of 19 points. I'm looking at that, and I'm looking at keys to the game. Their number 2 is Brady unscathed. 2 combined sacks over the past 4 weeks. I go back to week 1, a loss that we still find inexplicable, the way that the Dolphins did them, albeit the way the Dolphins have come on, maybe it's less inexplicable. What did they do it with? They did it with some very powerful play from their front 7. And this is one where
I like what you're saying here.
The physicality of the Lions. I don't know why. I'm just sort of getting a flashback to that Miami game, and I'm just pulling this one out of my anus. But I mean, if Tom Brady actually went down with an injury, I'm not saying a big one, and I don't look for anybody to get injured. But it's like this is the kind of game where it feels like it could happen. You'll see on the scroll at the bottom of the screen, Brady out, status questionable. I don't know. I just got that weird feeling with the way that the Lions have been bringing the noise up front. I'm going to say take the Lions and the 7 on the road.
I like where your head's at. I almost made this a recommendation. I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to just flat it from a strictly handicapping betting perspective. Currently, and there obviously is a line, you know, there are lines out there somewhere, which is why I think that, you know, our one page there that we rely on may have a bug or something like that, because I saw lines everywhere else here as I'm continuing to look and on other sites. And 92% of all wagers on this game, at least online, have come in on New England. I think that's ridiculous for a game that as you kind of broke it down, is not a great matchup for them going against the front, you know, 4 and then obviously front 7 of Detroit. I think the Lions could keep it close. I'm not giving up on this team despite the loss last week to Arizona. I've got my eye on it. I'm not recommending it here, but I would be inclined to take the points with the Lions if you made me, but it did not make my list of five recommendations this week.
Okay, all right. So with your leaning in my direction, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Up next, it's a divisional matchup, the 7-3 Packers at the 4-6 Vikings. 1 o'clock Eastern time from TCF Bank Stadium in Minneapolis on Fox with five-time Lounge guest Kenny Albert on the call along with Daryl Moose Johnston and Tony Siragusa. This is one where the Pack is laying 9 points up from 7.5 initially. I know you chuckle that a lot of times I keep going to this, but this is a number for a lot of teams that just jumps out at me. Yards given up on the ground, the teams that really have been shown to be kind of porous up front here. Green Bay, oh, it didn't bite them last week like I thought it would against Philadelphia, but 139
yards
per game.
No, it didn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it didn't.
That would be an understatement. Yeah, I don't think that rush defense hurt Green Bay last week. Oh, that is a minor understatement. I believe they just scored again on Philadelphia's defense. Yes.
Well, if you pour it on them that much, that's the way to get around it. And look, you could see a scenario where they do the same thing to Minnesota, but Jerick McKinnon, the way that he's come on, look, that's the game plan against Green Bay anyways. I mean, even if they had a front seven that allowed, let's say, closer to 100 yards per game rushing, that would still be the formula, is try to pound the ball, move the chains, keep Aaron Rodgers on the sidelines as much as possible. The route to victory against Green Bay just happens to coincide with their defensive weakness. I'm not saying Minnesota's going to win, but I like them with the 9 at home.
Oh, I love where your head's at here, Rick Morse. There are plenty. And you said a 9. Let's not sugarcoat. Let's not, shortchange ourselves here. There are plenty of 9.5s and 10s on the board that I'm seeing. And as I shared with you in the show notes, home dogs, this is a kind of almost out of the Mark Lawrence playbook, no pun intended. It isn't from him, but it sounds like it would be. Home dogs of 9.5 or more, 59% since 1978. So, obviously a large sample size in the league has changed several times over. But, look, Green Bay and Lambeau this week. That I think this team is going to do very well in the second half of the season. I don't think they're going to lose many games moving forward. They're probably going to win this game, but it's going to be really cold and crappy. Remember, it's an outdoor stadium in Minnesota now.
Yep.
I look for the Vikings to stay under the number. This is my third recommendation of the week.
Okay. And I think it's a solid one, obviously, based on what I said. So I agree as well.
Yeah.
Up next, it's the 1-9 Jags at the 6-4 Colts. 1 o'clock Eastern time, Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis on CBS. Tom McCarthy and Chris Sims on the call. Is Chris Sims the Brian Greasy of announcers? One wonders about that. I don't know. But in looking at this game, the Colts are laying 13.5 down from 14 initially. So it's toggling right around that 2-touchdown mark. Mm. And again, what I keep coming back to, and it's perhaps an odd thing in this age of the passing game and how it's never been stronger in the NFL, but a lot of times, again, that's the way to counteract it. These are two teams that are divergent right now when it comes to their running games, and it has been an arrow in the up direction with Jacksonville since getting away from the awful Toby Gerhardt and going to Denard Robinson, who's really been killing it. And for Indianapolis, yet another question mark with Ahmad Bradshaw going down. They don't seem to block the same way for Trent Richardson, so that's kind of a questionable thing there. So I look at this, and I think Jacksonville, by being able to pound the ball, is going to be able to stay inside of the 13.5. They're going to be able to play to their strength, maybe give Blake Bortles a chance to work some play action. They're sure as hell not going to win this game, but I think they can stay closer than people think.
Again, it has gone down in some shops. Some places it's gone up. 14, 15 on the board. You know me. I ain't taking Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm actually going to shy away from recommending Jacksonville, Ricky Morris, because Andrew Luck, off a loss, has just been incredible. Now, he hasn't been asked to lay 14 points many times in that spot. But, this one, along with Detroit, I'm kind of waiting on. We do the show midweek. And this is a game, Jacksonville's a side that I could see myself maybe on Friday deciding, all right, I'll add them to the ticket. But right now I'm just a little leery just because of Luck's history off a loss, and then they got beat up pretty good there in the second half, and really for the full game at home by New England on Sunday night. And here's another thing I keep coming back to. Indianapolis has that unbelievable record since Luck came to the team, over 2 years ago, two and a half years ago, in close games. So if you're saying that Jacksonville covers, I know this is, kind of seems, I'm outthinking myself, then you're kind of saying, maybe Indianapolis wins another close one. And that's why I went against them last week when they played New England. I didn't think they could win a close game, and it turned out they just got blown out instead. So I'm just a little leery on Jacksonville here. They burned me many times in the past, and I'm not going to let it happen again, at least on the show.
Well, I can't blame you. Post-Jacksonville collapse trauma, they've had an even worse year than anticipated in a lot of quarters. They made a lot of improvement in the second half last year under Gus Bradley, and kind of questionable what's happened to them this year. Up next, this game is going to be very, very unique for the snow globe that it's going to be played in. The 2-8 Jets at the 5-5 Bills, 1:00 Eastern Time, Ralph Wilson Stadium in Orchard Park, New York. On CBS, Spiro Dedus and Solomon Wilcots are the poor suckers that will be stuck in the booth for this one. This is a game where Buffalo is laying 4.5 up from 3.5 initially. I made a reference to the weather, and that's going to dominate my thoughts on this game. For anybody who's been paying attention to what's been happening, upstate New York in parts of their Interstate 90, the big artery going across the northern part of the state, at one point shut down because of 3 feet of snow. And depending on where you're at with this lake effect storm that's been happening all this week, there may be another 2 feet by the weekend. Here's the thing, Kyle, that over the weekend, it could reach 50 degrees up there. So this field, to my knowledge, is not one of the more modern ones in the league as far as drainage systems and whatnot. The newer stadiums have all these advancements. The older ones, by and large, do not. And I realize that I'm kind of generalizing here, but this field is going to be the drizzling shiznits on Sunday. No two ways about it. I like the Jets running game with Chris Ivory. I don't like the Bills running game right now, even if Fred Jackson's able to come back in there. And frankly, the Bills are a little bit easier to run on than the Jets statistically. So I will say take the Jets because I think they can win outright. The collapse of the Bills is already underway.
Yeah, I'm hoping they can get 7 wins so I can cash my future bet at least of over 6.5. Last week's loss for the Bills, I think, pretty much showed that this is not a playoff team. They're just more contenders than we thought in the AFC. The Bills are not going to be able to leapfrog enough of them. You look on paper, you talk about on paper, teams like Baltimore, Miami, Kansas City, really the entire AFC North, even Houston maybe, are just probably better than the Bills at this point. Kyle Orton, not any kind of long-term answer. We said that months ago. I'm just not interested in this game, though. The Jets stink on the road. I know they're off a bye, but, any advantage there is kind of lessened because Buffalo's coming off the Thursday game, so they'll have a few extra days to prepare. Just zero interest. This, of all the games on this week's card, I always say there's one that I cross out right away. In the case of this week, it was this one. Just not zero interest in getting down here. I do agree with you. I can see the Jets winning outright. And they're probably due to start covering some games down the stretch. Their against the spread record is so poor there in the first half. I cannot endorse the Jets on the road. I know, it was Geno Smith that really sucked the big one on the road, not Mike Vick, but, Mike Vick's not awesome either.
Right. Well, and this isn't going to be a recommended play for me just because, again, the extreme unpredictability of the way that weather can go. I'm pretty much hinging my pick based on who I think is going to handle the climate a little bit better. But, knows?
You and your OCD who's got to pick every game. Obviously I understand that if you got to go away. You go to Jets. Me, I don't play that way. If I'm not interested, I say no thank you, and I am most certainly saying no thank you here.
OCD is actually flattering. I think it's just my egotism. I want to be on the record with everything here. So being the completist that I am, I'll put one down on the next game as well here, another non-recommended play. That's mighty white of me. It's the 2-8 Bucks at the 4-6 Bears, 1:00 Eastern Time, Soldier Field on Fox. Tom Brennan and David Beal and the lovely Tamara Oakman on the call for this one. Chicago is laying 5.5 up from 5. Initially, we talk regression and progression to the mean. That was one of the reasons I was on the Bears last week. They got to be better at home than they have been. And again, for an underachieving team, they were at least able to do that and win that game. I'm on the Bears on this one because, and again, a note in USA Today Sports Weekly that kind of got me thinking. They recommend fantasy plays for each game there, and they're saying start Jay Cutler. And I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at what the Bears have done over the course of the year. Jay Cutler, consistent with his personality, a classic bully. Beats up on the weak, struggles against the strong. Guess what? It's a weak sister this week. If Jay Cutler rolls, so too do the Bears. So I like them laying the 5.5.
I don't disagree with anything you just said. I really don't. And also, the Bears were a recommendation for me. I don't give out plays on every game. I did give out one on them last week against Minnesota for the very reason you just espoused. They just are due to start covering home games under Mark Trestman. They have not done that very well at all the first year and a half. But I just feel like it's playing with fire, laying points with them 2 weeks in a row. Like, it was not, they did not look awesome last week against Minnesota by any means. Like, they should not, that was not a win where you should just start patting yourself on the back, oh, we really handed it to them, because they didn't. And, you know, you've said in the past that Tampa Bay probably isn't as bad as its record. You know, I think it could be debated either way, but what can't be debated is that Lovie Smith is going to be fired up for this game to face his former team. That was another thing that just made me say, I'm out, so I'm not playing this one.
Well, yeah, two of the bigger underachieving teams in the league, no question about it. They are both talent-wise better than their records, no question about that. An interesting game up next as well. It's the 4-6 Rams at the 6-4 Chargers, 4:05 Eastern time from Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego on Fox. Chris Myers, Rondé Barber, Jennifer Hale on the call. San Diego is laying 5 in this one, down from 6 initially. This is one where my instinct on the game from looking at your notes here goes against yours, and I'll tell you why. I'm looking at the trend line here, and I've been on San Diego the better part of the year. I've been beating their drum the better part of the year. But remember we talked about it earlier in the year, a couple weeks in, Jeff Fisher and the entire defensive unit should be fired because how do you have the worst pass rush defense since the merger a couple weeks in? With by the way, that's back to 1970, folks, for those of you kids out there. With that front seven, and in recent weeks, progression to the mean, baby. I look at the trend line of their front seven. I look at the protection for Phillip Rivers in the last month or so, and I don't like it. I think St. Louis can cause some heat on Phillip Rivers and cause him some problems there. Keep it close. I like him with the 5.
In all due respect, Rick Morris, I am going to disagree. I am also looking at the trend line, but it is a different one. It is the column that reads ATS. San Diego has now failed to cover 5 straight games.
Okay.
You may say, why would you then take them? Well, you know, at home for a second straight week, teams generally don't fail to cover more than 5 in a row. They certainly can, but it's uncommon. I mean, they're in kind of that real, their backers are, their pockets are feeling real empty right now. And remember, this team started the year real hot. I believe they covered their first 5 games. So, again, you talk about progression, regression, there you have it. Covered their first 5, haven't covered their next 5. They are also catching St. Louis. We need to talk about this. Off a stunning 22-7 win over Denver last week.
Yes.
The Rams have now beaten Seattle, San Francisco, and Denver, who came into the year my 3 top-ranked teams. What did they do the week after they beat Seattle? Well, they lost to Kansas City 34-7. What did they do the week after they beat San Francisco? Well, they lost 31-14 to Arizona. The Rams typically, look, they've done this before. They did last year. I think they killed Indianapolis once at home, and I think then they stunk next week.
Yes.
It's just kind of what the Rams do. They're going to lose this game. This is a get-well game for the Chargers. I thought they'd be a playoff team before the year, just like you did. I don't really think that now, but I do think they cover this week. This is my 4th recommendation.
This is
a rare favorite, too. A rare favorite, too.
Bucking me to lay 5 points. Now I've seen everything. That is truly outstanding.
And once again, 4.5. I see a 4.5 out there, too. I'm laying that, huh? You got to go line shopping, people. Yeah, I see. Yeah, you got to go line shopping, people. And it's going to drop, too. I think this line's going to drop. This is going to be... there's only one kind of underdog I don't like, Rick Morris. Publicly backed underdogs. The Rams were a publicly backed underdog this week.
Well, that's a great point right there. Up next, the aforementioned team that got drilled by the Rams last week, the 7-3 Broncos, are playing host to the 6-4 Dolphins, 4:25 Eastern Time, Sports Authority Field in Denver on CBS. Nance, Sims, and Wolfson on the call for that one, being beamed there after doing the Thursday nighter. And that line is 7 for Denver, down from 7.5 initially. And again, as I've been saying really ever since we've been doing this, the Dolphins are my 1A team. Didn't grow up a hometown fan as I did for the Browns. They're sort of my secondary team that I root for. And yet, I've been a big skeptic on them this year. But as I showed with the Charger pick, I'm not necessarily going to be chained to that. I'm looking at this. This looks like a classic bounce-back game for Denver, but boy, they got some injuries here. Julius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, Monty Ball, Ronnie Hillman. They got some real injuries offensively here. Miami's a physical team defensively. Lamar Miller is good at keeping the chains moving when he's back healthy, as he proved that he was in the last game against Buffalo. And you talk about regression to the mean. With Denver laying 73 yards per game on the ground, we saw a little bit of that against the Rams. They're not a historically good front seven. They're a really good one, maybe probably one of the two or three best in the league, but that's a ridiculous number, and guess what? It's a higher number than it was a week ago because Trey Mason had his way with them. Lamar Miller won't do the same, but it's the same thing as what I was talking about with the Minnesota-Green Bay game. That's the game plan for trying to beat Denver. We saw it last week with St. Louis, perfectly executed. Miami may not execute it well enough to win the game, but they're going to keep Peyton Manning sidelined enough that with the combination of the injuries offensively, they're not going to be in full rhythm. I like Miami to cover the points.
Wow. Wow, Rick Morris. A lot of pleasant surprises this week. The world's going to be on Denver, you're right, but I cannot drum up enough support on Miami on the road to take the points. No thanks. Pass.
Okay.
I can't. I mean, Denver is a much, much better team at home than on the road. They've really struggled on the road. They beat the Raiders, and they have one other road win, but it was not an impressive performance. I can't remember. It's escaping me right now. But, I mean, at home, they're very good, and I do expect them to bounce back and win. Miami, I'm not completely sold on them. I think ultimately they come up short in their quest for the playoffs.
Well, I think they're very likely still a fraudulent team, and it hurts me to say that as a fan. But, yeah, in this circumstance, I do like them. Speaking of fraudulent teams.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Denver's other road win this year, at the Jets, the game they had no business covering. Remember, they had that pick six late. So.
Right. That's right. Well, that's something to be mindful of as well. Speaking of fraudulent teams there, my segue that you'll like, the 3-7 Redskins, we saw them last week, get absolutely exposed against Tampa Bay, got the 6-4 49ers. That's one where that was a why ask why pick because I thought the line was so bad. You have to distinguish sometimes. That was just a line that looked strange. It wasn't so bad I should have gone the other way, and I've learned my lesson. 4:25 Eastern time from Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara on CBS. Kevin Harlan, Rich Gannon on the call. For this one, this is a game where San Francisco is laying 9 up from 7.5. And, again, trend lines. You look at where Washington's going. You look at San Francisco. Again, I was probably the only pundit out there that didn't bail on them at their very nadir earlier in this season. They're showing right now they are still a legitimate playoff team. And, again, I'm going to go back to this again. Yards per game surrendered on the ground, 88.6. I don't think Washington can get the amount of balance they need with Alfred Morris there, because the thought is on San Francisco, try to do that, try to somehow take the steam off of RG3 and or Colt McCoy once he goes down or gets the hook, whichever comes first. But, yeah, I think this is one that could get ugly. I think Washington may have a bunch of ugly games in front of them, this being one of them. I do like San Francisco laying the 9.
Yeah, I got caught just like you. Thinking Washington off a bye could take care of business against Tampa Bay. What a heinous performance that was. That being said, look, 10.5 I see out there. You can even get higher than a 9. They're begging you to take Washington. You know what? I don't have a lot of justification for it. Washington's not very good. San Francisco does appear to have things turned around. I'm taking the points of the Redskins. They just have to, like, cover a game sooner or later, don't they? Other than that upset of Dallas on Monday night. By the way, they were a 9-point dog on the road there as well. That's their only cover the last 7 weeks. We always talk progression, regression of the mean. I think Washington is kind of find some stinky, sneaky way to hang around. my fifth and final recommendation of the week, the Washington football team.
Interesting. So the headline here, Kyle Ross says, take the Redskins. All right, that'll be a very interesting one for you to culminate on. The Washington Redskins, Kyle Ross. I'm not afraid to say it. I'm not one of these effete blue state Americans, my friend. I'll say Washington Redskins. The Sunday nighter.
Sitting Bull was sitting here, I'll say that much.
Hey, I'll just for a segue. We got a red state against the blue state on Sunday Night Football. It's the 7-3 Cowboys at the 3-7 Giants. 8:30 Eastern Time, MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford. Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth, Michelle Tafoya on the call at NBC. Dallas is laying 3 up from 2.5 initially. Given the way both teams have looked recently, almost a borderline why the Giants aren't getting more than this. I know they're at home and there's all that, but
It does matter.
It does. It's only supposed to be worth 3 points, and it looks like there's more than a 3-point discrepancy here. But again, to me, it's just a bad combination. I'll go back to this again. For Dallas, they have been one of the teams in the league this year most identified with the ground game, with everything that's happened with DeMarco Murray. I just don't think the Giants are going to be able to stop them. And the more that they're able to lean on DeMarco Murray, the less likely it is that Tony Romo is going to remember that he's Tony Romo as the weather starts to get cold, which has been the history of Dallas over the last decade or so. So I guess my better judgment, Dallas in November and especially December, very fatal to you as a gambler, but I will lay the 3 points in this one.
Wow, Rick Morris laying points on the road with the Dallas Cowboys. I have heard it all now. Look, I'm a blue state guy, as you know, and I really want to take the Giants here because they have failed to cover 5 in a row. They've also lost all those games straight up. I actually watched a great deal of their game last week against San Francisco, and that is why I am not taking the Giants this week. They are an awful football team right now. Like, Eli Manning, he threw 5 interceptions, which is obviously bad. You don't need to watch the game. You see 5 interceptions, that's bad. I saw all of them. They were all horrible, horrible interceptions. Like, what are you doing? Dallas' offense bye, which also would give me pause. So, no thanks, home dog, but I'm not endorsing the Cowboys as a road favorite. Nope, no way.
Well, and certainly the Giants have had a rougher November than even Harry Reid at this point, to bring the analogy full circle. In a way that I find enjoyable personally.
I'm looking like Harry Reid these days, so I'll tell you that much.
Yes, he is. No question about that. We get to my big three plays for the week here as we culminate every week. First up, it's the 6-3-1 Bengals at the 5-5 Texans, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, NRG Stadium in Houston on CBS. Ian Eagle, past lounge guest, along with Dan Fouts and Jenny Dell on the call. This is one where Houston is laying 1. It was a pick'em initially. My thoughts on this one are, again, as much as I made a crack about Tony Romo in the last game here, a lot of the things you say about him are the same things that you can say about Andy Dalton. And, again, I look at this, that what he did last week, we have to reassess Andy Dalton if he can pull this one out on the road here, because Houston is a team that has tormented them in the playoffs. Look at what J.J. Watt did to my Cleveland Browns last week, and think about him getting turned loose on Andy Dalton, not just him, but Brian Cushing and some of the other guys on that defense. I'm not ready to reassess on Cincinnati. I'm not ready to reassess on Houston, because I said they could make the playoffs at the start of the year. So in a week where I find myself with very, very few strong feelings either way, those two thoughts right there are enough to push me onto a recommendation. Houston -1 on Sunday against the Bengals.
I want to be with you. And early in the week, I really liked Houston here, but I've talked myself out of it. You talk about their past domination in Cincinnati. They are 6-0 against the spread last 6 meetings, including 2 playoff victories. This is just the kind of game that I've been getting wrong all year. The winner here is in a great spot for the playoffs. Obviously, Houston's division is a lot easier, and I think I'm like you. You didn't really reference this, but I think this is part of your thing. I know they beat New Orleans last week. I don't think Cincinnati's that good. That point differential is still pretty lousy. Second of 3 road games. God, I really want to go Houston. I'm just sort of talking myself out of it, so I'm not going to do it. I think it's a good pick by you, though.
Thank you. And progression to the mean. If these are the kind of games you've been getting wrong all year, maybe you're due to start getting them right. But that's your choice if you want to make it a recommendation or not. And not is the call, I guess, from you. Up next to my second one, it's the 9-1 Arizona Cardinals. Say it with me, kids. 9-1, best record in the league at the 6-4 Seattle Seahawks. 4 o'clock Eastern Time, CenturyLink Field in Seattle on Fox. Kevin Burkhart, John Lynch, and the delicious Pam Oliver on the call here. This is one where Seattle is laying 6.5 up from 5.5 again. I got burned on Seattle last week. I've gotten burned on them a bunch this year. As with San Francisco, I haven't jumped off their bandwagon. I'm a believer. Having said that, I don't get this line. They're laying that much in a year where their home field has meant less than it has last year, and it's supposed to mean that much more against a 9-1 team. What do the wise guys know that I don't? It must be something. If I think the line is absurd, I'm going to go the other way for my instinct. Seattle to lay the 6.5 against Arizona. It worked when I did it with Arizona against Denver earlier this year. I thought the line was absurd then. I went on Denver. I was right. It's the only loss Arizona's had all year. This should be their second.
I wish we had more time because I just want to talk a lot about this game. Look, Arizona's still
not
top. Yes, Arizona's not a top-five team. I don't care what you or anybody say. They're not a top-five team. They could very well win this damn game, though, and piss me off. This is a team that did not score for three quarters last week against Detroit. I don't know how they keep doing it. I'm telling you, though, I watched a lot of Seattle last week. They do not even look like a playoff team. Although, that was a really good game against Kansas City overall. It was not a lot of punting. It was a very old-school kind of playoff-like game where both teams were using their feature backs a lot. I think it's too many points. And look, you know me. This is one that I would normally jump all over Seattle, but look, you tell me getting burned. I've been getting burned in Arizona. And I'm going to say one final thing with Seattle and San Francisco. One of them ain't making the playoffs. I'm telling you right now. One of them is not making the playoffs.
At this point, that seems likely, and it's a tragedy if a lesser team makes it in over either of those two, but could very well happen.
Like Arizona.
In our scant time remaining, my 1,000-star gold-plated lock of the millennium for NFL Week 12. In this game, it's the 6-4 Ravens at the 4-6 Saints, 8:30 Eastern Time on ESPN Monday night at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Tirico Gruden and Salters on the call. New Orleans is laying 3 in this one. I'm just going to go back to, in our brief time remaining here, progression to the mean. New Orleans had to lose at home. Remember, they had that streak that was just insane forever. Now twice in a row, you're telling me it's going to be 3 in a row against Baltimore? I think not. Saints get off the schneid at home.
Yeah, God, do I want to agree. I talked myself out of this one, too, though. I just, is it that easy?
I
don't know. Like, I mean, I was all over them when they against Green Bay, if you remember, on this Sunday night game. And New Orleans is ridiculous in prime time. I just look at this and I think to myself, who wouldn't bet New Orleans? But I looked and saw the betting was about 50-50. So you're probably right, but I talked myself out of it. It didn't make the record. I'm not recommending it.
All right. Well, my picks for this week are Houston, Seattle, and the lock pick of New Orleans. Yours are San Diego, Washington, Minnesota, Oakland, and over 47 in the Atlanta-Cleveland tilt. So, again, we'll look forward to another great Week 12. I think we're going to do probably an abbreviated version of the show next week, a holiday week here. I may be just collecting your picks from you and doing an abbreviated solo version of this because of your schedule and mine during the holiday week here. But we'll be back together doing this 2 weeks from now and giving the peeps some more chances to make money off of our wisdom.
Yeah, and you know what? Maybe you know, since I won't be able to speak with you next week, I'll come on over in 2 weeks from now. We'll do a little. We'll give them a little bit longer. We'll give the people.
Oh.
We'll give the people more than what. We'll be 3/4 of the way through the season at that point, and you know we can reassess these playoff positions again. So who knows? Maybe I'll do that. Who knows? As long as it doesn't snow. As long as it doesn't snow, I'm there.
All right, a little bonus for the people. Look forward to it. Enjoy week 12 of the NFL, Kyle, and everybody out there. And thank you all for joining us today on this mini episode of the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.